KKO Live. We've gotten a lot of questions about whether the House impeachment impairs any of the president's powers to act, both domestically and internationally. We're going to answer that for you today. And Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, she gives suggestions to Iran on sites to target for their terror attacks in response to the killing of Qassem Soleimani. We'll talk about it today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We're live today. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We will get into some of the news with Qassem Soleimani and the press conference by Mike Pompeo, probably more in the second half of the broadcast today or second half hour. This first half hour, you know, we get a lot of questions in almost every day since the articles of impeachment passed the House of Representatives about whether or not these articles somehow impair the president's ability to act both foreign and domestically. So foreign, it would go to the attack on that killed Qassem Soleimani. Domestically, people even wonder, can he make judicial nominations while these articles of impeachment were passed by the House? Now, we're also going to update you on where that stands right now, because there's still been no movement from the House to take this to the trial stage in the Senate. Could it come later this week? It could. Could it be next week? It could. Now, what's good news to report is that Mitch McConnell now has the votes to block any Democrat witness demands in the impeachment trial once it begins. So two key senators, Senator Susan Collins and Senator Lisa Murkowski, on Monday evening backed McConnell's position that the Senate should follow the precedent on the 1999 Clinton impeachment trial and defer until later in the process the question of if they need any additional witnesses or not. So you don't decide that from the outset like Schumer wants to do. You do that later on. Hey, do we need any more information or not? Marco Rubio said, and I think this is worth noting, he tweeted out, the testimony and evidence considered in a Senate impeachment trial should be the same testimony and evidence the House relied upon when they passed the articles of impeachment. Our job is to vote on what the House passed, not to conduct an open-ended inquiry. Than, you had your meetings on Capitol Hill yesterday with key staff members, the House and the Senate. What is their reaction right now to what is going on with this impeachment? Is there going to be movement on it? Are they expecting movement on it sooner rather than later?
I think there is a general expectation, Jordan, that the articles will be sent over at some point, essentially just because there's not a strong leg for Speaker Pelosi to stand on to try to have it both ways, to try to say the president is impeached and yet to try to block the Senate from doing their job to try the impeachment. I'm not sure on timing, Jordan, but I do think it will happen soon. And I'm glad you read Marco Rubio's tweet right off the top of the broadcast, Jordan, because it really does expose the hypocrisy. On the one side, you have Speaker Pelosi and Chairman Schiff saying, we have to rush so quickly that we can't take the time to witness, to wait for the witnesses to take the testimony. Oh, but you, United States Senate, where we don't have the majority, you must call witnesses and you must call the ones that we want. Jordan, that is not a tenable argument. I think the American people know it. Quite frankly, I think even the House of Representatives knows it. I think eventually this is going to land in the United States Senate.
There you go. And then I also said at the beginning, and we're going to get into it later in the show, you've got Congresswoman Ilhan Omar saying, hey, and by the way, when she tweets this out, she's sharing it to the whole world, all those Trump businesses, those could be targets from Iran. I mean, she's literally suggesting targets to the enemy. We'll talk about that as well. This kind of radical Islamic congresswoman who I think it's this killing of Qassem Soleimani is really bringing out even more so the true Ilhan Omar. We're going to talk about it all today and answer your questions. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. There's a lot of great information up at aclj.org on all of these issues. A great What's Next video about the legality of taking out Qassem Soleimani, up to almost 200,000 views. Check it out on Facebook. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So first off, what is a very important news, I think, to report is that Mitch McConnell, a Senate Majority Leader, has secured enough votes to prevent Democrats' demands to require additional witnesses to testify at the start of President Trump's, what would be the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. That was the demand by Chuck Schumer, that we have to have new witnesses first. So he's got now Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski secured. So that's enough votes right there. Romney is kind of a wild card. He said he wanted to hear from John Bolton after John Bolton sent that tweet out saying, if I was subpoenaed, I would testify. But he didn't go so far to say is that I would vote to make that John Bolton has to testify before the trial begins. And then what they're saying is that if we feel like we need additional witnesses, of course, the Senate could call additional witnesses in the trial, but there's also issues of executive privilege when it comes to Bolton himself. I mean, we could go on a whole show about that. I don't think we need to yet, because right now we've got Mitch McConnell with the votes, and I think that's why that you might see the articles of impeachment move a little bit quicker to the Senate than even the media was expecting, is because Mitch McConnell now has got the solidified votes from two of the more moderate Republican senators, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, on that question of calling witnesses at the start of the trial following the Clinton procedures. It's exactly what they're doing. And it's what Marco Rubio said. Our job is not to become fact finders again and not to reinvestigate. Our job is to hear what has been investigated, what the House put together, and then we are the jurors in that matter. We're not supposed to investigate for them. They could have kept their investigation going in the House. They had no limits on that. They could have tried to get these witnesses to testify, subpoenaed them, done that, put that in their articles, used that for their reports. But they decided to vote on those two articles of impeachment. And what Senator Rubio is saying is, you know, that's not the Senate's job, is not to investigate. The Senate's job is to, again, hear the evidence and then cast votes as members of a jury. Take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Alice from Periscope writes in, how is Ilhan Omar getting away with the things she is saying? Let me read her tweet. This is from last night. Trump needs to immediately divest from his business and comply with the emoluments clause, which, by the way, no one's no court has said he's violating. Iran could threaten Trump's hotels worldwide, and he could provoke war over the loss of revenue from skittish guests. So she's saying the president would go to war over his hotels being targeted. But what she's really saying is, and I'll go to Harry and Wes on this, Wes, to you first as a retired colonel, is here's some targets for you, Iran.
Yeah.
That could really make President Trump unhappy.
Right. And it's undeniable. That's exactly what she's implying. Her contempt for President Trump, as with so many on the left, blinds them to national security issues and to the inappropriateness of their tweets and their other remarks. You know, I should say that this surprises me. Coming from Ilhan Omar, it does not surprise me, but it is shocking that she would say something like this and her fellow Democrats do not call her out and say, look, whoa, that crosses the line, because she actually is putting ideas in the heads of our enemies. And, you know, if these attacks were to happen, that would be horrible. Innocents would die. But apparently she's blind to the inflamed rhetoric that she's using.
Yeah, I mean, Harry, this idea that, again, basically telling Iran, hey, this is how you get under the president's skin. Start targeting his hotels worldwide. This is from a member of the U.S. Congress. I mean, she might not like the president at all. She might disagree with all of his policies. But the idea that she's saying, hey, Iran, these would be good targets. I mean, that's how I read the tweet. This would really get under the president's skin. So she tries to do it this couched in the emoluments clause, which, by the way, those cases have gone nowhere. So, again, this idea that she would be giving the enemy a target list that would really upset the president.
Well, I think that's correct. I think that is her objective, and the fact that she was sufficiently wise to, from a public relations standpoint, to throw in the emoluments clause, even though there's no basis for it, I think underscores a number of things. First, Ilhan Omar dislikes President Trump immensely. Number two, Ilhan Omar dislikes Trump voters immensely. Number three, she dislikes the American people and American policy immensely. So at each and every opportunity, as a member of Congress, she has attacked U.S. policy going back for the last 10 to 20 years. So when the United States stands up to terror, more likely than not, you can count on Ilhan Omar to stand with our enemies.
You know, it's interesting talking to about the impeachment. Adam Schiff right now is on MSNBC, and he has just said, and Than, I want to go to you on this, that John Bolton, if he is subpoenaed, it should be done by the Senate. Because there was this idea floating around that he might try to subpoena Bolton in the House, since Bolton opened himself up to that. That could lead to protracted legal battles over executive privilege, so that it should be done in the Senate. It seems to me we're starting to see, Than, these House members want to kind of wash their hands of these articles and get them sent over. I mean, he may have to defend them, Schiff. He may be one of the managers, but get them over to the Senate and not reopen the articles, as some have suggested on the left. I read that yesterday, that some of the left said they should reopen the articles of impeachment, bring in Bolton, bring in these other people. But now we're seeing that Schiff really is saying, well, maybe we should go to, let this happen in the Senate. I think it's another indication that the House is ready to be, the House Democrats have taken enough damage from this politically. It's just killing them, and they need to move it along.
Well, if even the architect of this effort in the House, Jordan, Chairman Schiff, wants those articles, or at least the questioning of John Bolton, to happen in the Senate, I think you're absolutely right. But imagine this. I mean, do I have this right? You have Chairman Schiff, who he wants to insist that John Bolton be questioned, but he doesn't want the job. I mean, Jordan, when was the last time that anything involving this impeachment effort, you heard Chairman Schiff say, maybe somebody else should do it. Maybe the Republicans who are in charge in the United States Senate should do it. That is a pretty telling statement, Jordan. And I think part of it is motivated by the fact that if he said anything else, the only thing you would have to do is pull up that press conference where he said, oh, we absolutely can't wait. The value is too high. We must rush this over to the Senate. Pretty hard to walk that one back, Jordan.
Yeah, let's go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. Alex calling from Michigan on line two. Alex, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, Alex.
Hey, my question is, once the impeachment proceedings hit the Senate floor, does that mean all the senators that are campaigning are no longer able to?
Well, okay, so let's do a little process here. If the articles are actually delivered, the Senate then has to go through their procedures to set up the trial. So that could take a couple of days. It could take a week. Depends on kind of the timing of when the articles were delivered, how they were delivered. So the Senate would then come up with its rules for the trial, vote on those rules. As we talked about, like McConnell's got enough votes to block witnesses to start off the trial. And that the Senate reserves the right to call witnesses, of course, if they feel like they need to later on in the trial. But they're not going to bow down to this Democrat demand from Pelosi and Schumer that they're going to call witnesses from the start. And he's got enough Republican votes to prevent that from happening now. We can report that. It has been reported. It's been confirmed because Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, those senators, have been clear now. They want to follow the Clinton model, which did not allow additional witnesses. It did not allow additional witnesses. It took what the House did, and then they put it on trial. That's what Marco Rubio was saying as well. So, Thad, what happens here, ultimately, those candidates who are U.S. senators, they will have to come back for some procedural votes initially, and then once the trial is scheduled, they are pretty much stuck. It's up to 6 days a week. The trial could go on Saturdays. It could take a week. It could take 2 weeks. It could take 3 weeks. And they're basically, they've got to be there. And I think there'd be a lot of pressure from them, from even their own constituents to be there. And of course, they've got a debate coming up, next week? And they've got the Iowa caucuses February 3rd.
Jordan, I think the appetite for a drawn-out trial would wane very quickly, even on the Democrat side of the aisle. I mean, the caller mentioned Senator Warren and Senator Sanders because of campaigning. But, Jordan, what about Senator Jones, who's on the ballot this year in Alabama? What about Joe Manchin, who's not on the ballot, but obviously he can't go too far left, otherwise his seat is in danger? So, Jordan, the Republicans are coalescing, but if the trial would start to drag out in the Senate, there would be Democrats on the floor wanting it to end as well.
Yeah. You talk about Amy Klobuchar, she's still running. Cory Booker's still running. I mean, these are all people still trying to be on the campaign trail. Elizabeth Warren. Again, another one who would be stuck. So a lot to talk about. We've got so much great information at ACLJ.org. We're almost at 200,000 views of this latest What's Next video on the legal justifications I lay out in 3 minutes for killing Kassam Soleimani.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
I think for the next What's Next video that I'm going to do, because I saw it popping up on Drudge Report. This pops up. I remember back in my time working for President Bush's reelection 2004, in the midst of the Iraq War, and John Kerry was, you know, beating the drum of this war. This was early on in the conflict. This idea that we were going to be instituting a new draft, which freaks people out, freaks a lot of I'd say suburban women with maybe sons who would be subject to the draft or close to the subject to the draft age. And I just want to – I'll dispel it right now. That is so bogus, okay? This is a bogus liberal talking point that they do every time there's some kind of military action that they disagree with to try and scare away what would be typical conservative – soccer mom type voters from supporting the current president. This is when you know they are desperate, because this is like a John Kerry move. So I'll explain it probably more in the What's Next video, but I want to go to Wes Smith on this, because we're dispelling some myths today on the broadcast. This idea that the president has no power, has lost power because of the House impeachment articles, that's not true. He can keep nominating judges. He can keep conducting foreign policy. In fact, it has no impact at all on his powers as president of the United States. None. Zero. But also this idea of the draft. Mm-hmm. Absurd.
It is absolutely absurd. It is fear-mongering. We have been at war in the war on terror for almost, 18 years with a complete all-volunteer force. We fought in the Gulf War with a complete all-volunteer force. This is fear-mongering at its worst. And Al Khamenei, the supreme leader in Iran, he is clever. He is not stupid. He, of course, is part of that group like Soleimani that they use religion to justify indiscriminate violence. They are good at that, but he's not stupid. He knows that a direct military confrontation with the United States of America, a country which is, you can make the case, is the last remaining superpower, it would be a suicidal mission not only for their military, it would be a suicidal mission politically for that regime. The people there are not happy as it is. I mean, just this past week in the streets of Iran, people were shouting death to Khamenei, to their supreme religious leader. So he knows that's not going to happen. There's really a triple threat that Iran is facing, including the supreme religious leader, and that is the unrest at home, which continues to grow. And oh, by the way, Soleimani killed over 500 of his fellow citizens, the Quds forces did, for demonstrating against the government. But he's got the unrest at home. He still has the Israeli defense forces, which from time to time attack Iranian targets in Syria for their own self-protection. So he has Israel there to keep him in check as well. But also, finally, and most importantly, I think he realizes how devastating a direct military conflict with the United States would be, and that keeps him from overreacting. He knows that a war against the world's most powerful superpower would be a huge error. And this idea that somehow we're going to go to war with Iran and they're going to reinstitute a draft is just bogus on the face of it.
So again, I think that I want everyone to just be clear on that. We'll do a What's Next video, I think, to dispel that myth. I've lived through it before with working on the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign in 2004 during the Iraq War. And we're not even in that kind of war situation right now. The president has rebuilt the military. It's stronger than ever before. We've got the resources it needs. I've seen no suggestions from any military leaders. And Than, I'm not seeing any suggestions on Capitol Hill that we need more troops. It was that we needed updated equipment, and that's what the administration has been committed to doing.
Jordan, it's an insult to the robust service of the volunteer service that we have, and quite frankly, it's an insult to those who are forward deployed as well. There's no suggestion on Capitol Hill that would be instated. There's no sign that it would be needed. And Jordan, just to kind of put some of the sound that you played from Secretary Pompeo in context, it's pretty clear if you look back over the decades that appeasement emboldens in the Middle East and resolve deters. This administration is resolved to deter, and it will not require any kind of a draft. The volunteer service is more than capable of carrying out that deterrence.
All right, so we get to the second half hour of the broadcast, which is coming up in just about 4 minutes. We're going to get more into, again, Secretary of State Pompeo, more of the Soleimani talk, but I kind of want to finish out, okay, where do we stand right now in Congress? Because I think it's important now, you know, we're back, as I said yesterday, you know, people are back to work, kind of shaking off the holiday, if you will, the clouds of the holidays and Christmas, and then it's New Year's, and then there's all these days in between, but both the Senate and the House are back. We're starting to get more statements from members of Congress. So, Than, now that they are back and their pressure is on, when it comes to impeachment, as we finish out this broadcast, if you had to put kind of like a bet, do you think that by at least next week these articles are getting delivered to the U.S. Senate and a trial is being set?
I think there's a very strong likelihood, Jordan. And look, at least in the very near future, because the coalescing that you're talking about in the United States Senate, we've sort of focused most on the left edge of the Republican Party, right. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. But then if you move sort of more towards the middle with Marco Rubio, him going even further and saying no witnesses would be appropriate because the House didn't do it. And then, Jordan, if you go even further, there are 10 senators led by Josh Hawley who have said, look, we think it's time for the Senate to force the action and change the rules and do it whether she sends them over or not. We've talked about that at long length, Jordan. I think there's a strong constitutional case that could be made. But I bring up those three factions, Jordan, basically to make this point. The United States Senate on the GOP side, they agree on this. They have the votes. I think that will put pressure on Speaker Pelosi. And while I can't tell you a day, I think that Chairman Schiff's comments that you played early in the broadcast suggest that her caucus knows that she needs to send them over. So whether it's today, tomorrow, you know, next week, I do think it's fairly imminent.
Yeah, I mean, here's Senator Josh Hawley on Fox News talking about what Nancy Pelosi's tried to do here. Take a listen, Byte 28.
Nancy Pelosi is attempting to obstruct a Senate trial. That's all there is to it. We need to change the Senate rules to allow the Senate to dismiss this case if she refuses to send the articles over.
And I think what happened, Harry, is the writing is starting to be on the wall that the votes might actually be there for that, that kind of action. That ultimately that would even be worse for Democrats to have no trial whatsoever, even though they know the outcome is likely the president acquitted, the articles dismissed. But the idea here is that this impeachment is extremely unpopular. It's becoming more unpopular with American voters every day. They're saying work with the president at least until the end of his term on legislation, enough with the impeachment, and we'll have our election November 3rd.
I think that is correct. And I think up till now, House Democrats have backed Nancy Pelosi's game of chicken. She, for instance, initially said she has not ruled out never sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate. I think she's going to back away from that. I think she embarked on this particular strategic pathway without a real end game in mind. And I think at the end of the day, the chickens will come home to roost.
All right, folks, we come back. Second half hour, taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Dispelling myths about presidential power when there's impeachment. We're getting into the latest on the killing of Qassem Soleimani. And Secretary Pompeo's remarks, which I think were pretty clear and convincing compared to the Iranian propaganda coming out of their foreign minister and just falsehoods and lies. What else to expect from Iran? So we'll talk about that in our second half hour, and we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Don't you think the Democrats love, by the way, no one's looking at their camera?
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Hey, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live in our second half hour. Let me just update you quickly, too, on the President Trump's legal team. You may have noticed my dad has not been in the studio, and that is because he's preparing for the Senate trial. He represents the president. I'm on that team as well. I'm a more junior member, so I'm able to bring you the broadcast each day, which I think is very important as well to keep talking to the American people. But he is preparing for that. I know he's heading to Washington, D.C. To start, because this could happen, as we've been talking about. These articles could be sent over at any time. He will have a role to play in that Senate trial once it begins, and we begin that, and we believe that could begin sooner rather than later. Now, again, I put an asterisk with that. When I say sooner, I'm talking in Washington talk. I'm not saying tomorrow. I'm saying, you know, in the next week and a half. First, they've got to get through, if they even get the articles delivered to them with the House managers named, they'd have to get through then coming up with their rules for the trial. That could happen fairly quickly, and then the trial beginning. But again, so our legal team is prepared for the president. I'm not talking about the ACLJ, but for the president's legal team is prepared for any and all options. If the House tries to take any new action, though Schiff kind of put a damper on that idea of that was floating in the liberal media that he should subpoena Bolton, because that could lead to some protracted court battles again on executive privilege. So he's saying, no, the Senate should do it. So he's kind of punting on that, which means I think we're getting closer and closer to Nancy Pelosi. Ultimately, now, again, she could reverse course at any time. She's getting pressure from a lot of different sides, but it seems like she's getting closer and closer to delivering those articles. I want you to know, if you're a supporter of the president, the president's legal team is ready to go whenever this happens, however it happens, and whatever form it takes. And that is why my dad has not been on the broadcast these last a few days. And I'm sure he'll be on to be able to get us updated once, again, there is a clear idea of the path forward. But I know I wanted you all to know that they are ready to go on that legal team. It is ready to go. And if you were on the other side of that aisle, can't wait to see a real trial with these real attorneys getting to take on folks like Adam Schiff and others, especially after the report came out on the FISA court abuses and all the information there about how this all begins and all this starts and the mess inside the bureaucracy. But again, I just wanted to let you all know that as well, like, because I know my dad's been out. This is Jay Sekulow Live. He hasn't been on, so what's been going on? I think most of you can guess, but if you're one of the president's longest-serving legal team members, which he is, then you understand what he's been working on and focusing on. I think you all appreciate that for the most part, and our listeners this broadcast appreciate that. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. A couple of things to note. I think first, right off the bat, to kind of end the discussion on where we are on impeachment, is then that breaking news that Mitch McConnell has got the votes to stop Schumer's demand to require witnesses to testify at the start of the impeachment trial. He's got Murkowski. He's got Collins on board. So Romney may be some kind of a wild card, though he didn't say in the tweet he would have to have these witnesses testify at the start of the trial and would vote against that. So, I mean, it may be that all Republicans are on board, actually, with starting the trial without any new witnesses.
Jordan, I actually think that is the most likely scenario, yeah, because this request is so outlandish. I mean, it's basically the House Democrats saying there were witnesses that we were not willing to call and do our job, even though that's where the investigation has to happen. But you in the United States Senate, even though we are not in the majority, you have to do it. Jordan, I don't think there was ever a GOP senator that was going to go for that. But yes, with Susan Collins' announcement and Lisa Murkowski's announcement, it means there's at least 52 votes for waiting until later in the process before even addressing that. Very significant news, Jordan, and probably the biggest piece of evidence that Speaker Pelosi is under an awful lot of pressure to get on with it already.
All right, folks, we're taking your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. We're going to get into more about now Soleimani as well, because I think this is important, very important. Mike Pompeo held a press conference this morning that I think was very persuasive, even to those in the mainstream media.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So, I love this. This is Secretary of State Pompeo. He had a press conference this morning. You may have missed it. It was a little bit after. It was after, like, you may have been at work already, depending on where you live in the country. So, we kind of wanted to bring some of the most important parts from it to you today on the broadcast. And we are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. I kind of want your response to this. Because you had the foreign minister of Iran, Zarif, claim that Soleimani, the head of the Quds Force, the most dangerous terror force within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, oh, he was just traveling to Baghdad, by the way, in violation of UN Security Council resolutions, where he's not supposed to leave Iran, as a diplomat. He was just traveling as a diplomat. Take a listen, and listen closely, to Secretary Pompeo's response, Byte 44.
His first statement that is Soleimani was traveling to Baghdad on a diplomatic mission. Anybody here believe that? Is there any history that would indicate that it was remotely possible that this kind gentleman, this diplomat of great order, Qasem Soleimani, had traveled to Baghdad for the idea of conducting a peace mission? I made you reporters laugh this morning. That's fantastic. We know that wasn't true. We not only know the history, we know in that moment that was not true. Zarif is a propagandist of the First Order.
Yeah, right. Zarif is a propagandist of the First Order. Soleimani never traveled anywhere as a diplomat. In fact, he couldn't because he was barred by the UN Security Council from traveling anywhere to conduct any kind of activity, including diplomatic work, because of his ties to international terrorism.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable how some people on the left in the mainstream media are trying to act like killing Soleimani was like killing the vice president of Iran or their secretary of state. Soleimani was one of the great mass murderers of our time. He had the blood of thousands and thousands of people on his hands over the last 20 years, including over 600 American soldiers in Iraq. He was also the mastermind behind creating what's called a transnational Shia force that he was in charge of deploying all across the Middle East as Iran continued to export terror. And under his control and his leadership, Iran became a regional military power through its proxies and through the billions of dollars that it poured into terrorist groups all across that region. And they did this partly to give Iran some plausible deniability. They can say, well, we're not attacking, we're not killing, when in fact they were, and they were doing it through the channels controlled by Soleimani. So, this is this is bogus on its face. And not only that, you know, he was not popular among the Iranian people, partly because of the graft and the corruption connected with the IRGC and the Quds forces, partly because of the economic woes brought on in Iran, like high unemployment and water shortages. And recently they took away the fuel subsidies, so the gasoline is really expensive there. But most of all, he was not popular there because when the Iranians have come out over the last several years to demonstrate against their own government, it was the Quds forces under his orders that opened fire on Iranian citizens, killed over 500 of them. This guy was not a diplomat, Jordan. He was a murderer and a terrorist, and he wore the uniform of a major general. He was not a civilian. He was a military man.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I want to go because it's also been clear, you know, Iran said, and get your thoughts on this as well, 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. That's 1-800-684-3110. If you have any questions about this, any questions about impeachment, this is the day to call and ask about it because we're getting a lot more information now. We're getting a lot more kind of feel in Washington, D.C. about what is moving forward. So give us a call at 1-800-684-3110 to ask your questions, to give your comments on Jay Sekulow Live. But this idea that Iran now has pulled out, you know, of the nuclear deal completely. They've said they're going to begin enriching uranium at the highest levels they want to and move forward with their nuclear program. Now, here's what Secretary Pompeo said, and I think it's a clear message to Iran on a path to trying to get a nuclear weapon, which, by the way, we have. They don't. Maybe they need to remember that. You know, think about that the whole time they're making threats on the U.S. Not saying the U.S. President Trump would use nuclear weapons on Iran. But ultimately, they take some kind of severe action against the U.S. We have them. They don't. Let me repeat that again. We have the most destructive, killing, land-destroying weapons on Earth at our disposal at a moment's notice. The Islamic Republic of Iran does not. Okay? Take a listen to Secretary Pompeo, Byte 45.
President Trump could not be more clear. On our watch, Iran will not get a nuclear weapon. And as we came into office, Iran was on a pathway that had been provided by the nuclear deal, which clearly gave them the opportunity to have those nuclear weapons. We won't let that happen.
I feel like probably a lot of those 52 targets are the nuclear sites, if necessary to hit. Now, we're not going to go ahead and just start hitting targets in Iran, but if they start responding with aggression, we start hitting their nuclear facilities. Now that they've said that they're going to no longer comply with any kind of laws.
I think that's correct. So I think President Trump and Secretary of State Pompeo are sending a clear and unmistakable message. And I think the Iranian government would be wise to heed it. I think in contradistinction to the prior administration, under President Obama, the United States will no longer subsidize and appease the Iranian regime. It's important to note that under President Obama, we gave pallets of cash to the Iranian regime, and this enabled them to expand their network of terror. And I think those days are over, and I think the Iranian government needs to constrain its terror campaign, constrain its operations in the Middle East and elsewhere. Otherwise, it will have to face consequences. And I think one of the things that's very, very imperative for the Iranian regime is to live in a real world of consequences rather than a kind of imaginary world of dreams of worldwide domination.
I just think that when it comes down to all of this, when it comes down to this specific situation, here's the bottom line. It was like the What's Next video. Here it is from Joe Lieberman. We're taking your calls on this too. We're taking your calls. We're going to get back to some of the impeachment talk too. Some of this craziness from Ilhan Omar, I think, deserves a little more discussion from us as well. But listen to Joe Lieberman. This is a former Democrat senator, former Democrat vice presidential candidate. And he's speaking very clearly here, Byte 54.
The reality is it's very clear from the Constitution and common sense today that if a president decides to take action like this, he doesn't have to tell the country, the world, or have a vote in Congress.
There it is. Don't have to tell the country, the world, or have a vote in Congress. And that's from a Democrat. I mean, that's why President Obama was able to launch all those drone strikes without any congressional approval. Thousands of drone strikes during the Obama administration. No congressional approval. All they said was, we're authorized under the AUMF, the Authorization for Use of Military Force that Congress passed in 2001. We don't need anything else. We can just keep doing these drone strikes, killing people that we believe are terrorist targets indiscriminately, and we don't need to get your approval, Congress, to keep doing so. So Joe Lieberman echoing that, the same message. It's just that this is against this idea that if you're President Trump, all the rules have changed. We must declassify all information. I mean, Wes, we were hearing that yesterday. People were outraged on that on the broadcast. We need to declassify all the information that was given to Congress about why they believe that the attack was imminently being planned by Soleimani. This is absurdity coming out of our Democrats in the U.S. Congress.
It's absurdity, it's naivete, but it's also disingenuous because they don't really believe that. They know better. And later on this week, Jordan, Nancy Pelosi is planning on introducing reports or saying a resolution before Congress trying to restrict the president's powers as commander-in-chief. Apparently, Pelosi and crew, they don't understand the difference between declaring war, which hasn't happened since 1941, and the responsibility of the president as the commander-in-chief to take actions to defend the United States and military personnel wherever they are. Had he not taken steps to take out Soleimani and an attack had taken place, these same people would be blaming the president for being distracted over impeachment and not taking out Soleimani. It is disingenuous on steroids. It really is.
All right, folks, I want you to get your phone calls in now, 1-800-684-3110, because I want to take as many as we can in the final segment of the broadcast, which is coming up in about 2.5 minutes. So get your phone calls in now. I know Kevin's up. We'll get to Kevin first, 1-800-684-3110. Listen to this tweet from Ilhan Omar. Trump needs to immediately divest from his business and comply with the Emoluments Clause. Iran could threaten Trump hotels worldwide, and he could provoke war over the loss of revenue. So that he would go to war because they target his hotels. So she's telling Iran, you want to provoke President Trump, go after his hotels. Because it'll make his guests skittish and people from booking his hotels. I don't think Ilhan Omar and her friends would ever stay at a Trump property. But the idea that she's telling Iran through her tweet, hey, some of those targets you're talking about should be Trump properties. You know, the list is online. It's available. The Trump properties website. It's not hiding that. It's disgusting coming from a U.S. member of Congress. We'll take your calls on that as well. 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
this statement. This is from our former ambassador to the United Nations, someone I respect a lot, former governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley. And, you know, we're hearing Democrats question President Trump's actions on killing Soleimani. Who are we not hearing from? Who is remaining silent? Pretty interesting group of world actors who seem not to mind that the U.S. has taken out Iran's top terrorist. Take a listen to Nikki Haley, Byte 59.
You don't see anyone standing up for Iran. You're not hearing any of the Gulf members. You're not hearing China. You're not hearing Russia. The only ones that are mourning the loss of Soleimani are our Democrat leadership and our Democrat presidential candidates. No one else in the world, because they knew that this man had evil veins.
Wes, I go to you. It's absolutely true.
Yes,
I mean, I've been listening too. You don't hear anything from China. They could care less.
Mm-mm.
Russia's probably happy about it, weakens Iran. China likes weakening Iran, too. They don't want a nuclear Iran. And the Gulf states, they're scared of Iran's actions. They've taken these aggressive actions against them, firing rockets into Saudi Arabia through the Houthi rebels, which was conducted by Soleimani and overseen by Soleimani, the wars in Yemen, what they're doing in Syria, backing up the Assad regime. But you're not hearing from the others either that usually try to oppose any kind of U.S. aggression, Russia, right. China. Silence. The people complaining, Democrats,
yeah,
Americans.
This man was hated and despised and rightfully feared by people all around the world because he used indiscriminate violence. You have to keep in mind also, you know, Iran is not an Arab country. They're Persians. Soleimani was responsible for the death of thousands and thousands of Arabs as well. They were a threat to the Gulf states over there. This idea that somehow he was a great statesman and he's being mourned, I think the only people that are mourning him are the religious elite in Iran, who he was profiting with them off the people of Iran, and the supreme religious leader. Even the average citizen in Iran have been celebrating the death of this very, very wicked, violent man.
Yeah, we're talking about both these issues. I do want to take Kevin's call. We're talking impeachment. We're talking also the issue with Iran. It's kind of crossing over today, and these are kind of the two main issues the nation is dealing with right now. Kevin's got a good question in from Wisconsin on line one. Kevin, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. You're on the air.
Oh, okay, awesome. Thanks for taking my call. First, let me just say I am glad that they took him out. He needed to be taken out. He's evil. But the question I have, there was some all kinds of stuff on social media, of course, and they were talking about the money that the Obama administration had given him, $150 million or whatever the dollar amount was, and somebody chimed in and said that we didn't actually give them money. It was their money to begin with.
Okay.
We just released their money.
Okay, so yeah.
I just want to know what is the truth.
What's right? The truth? So we had, when the Iranian Revolution occurred in 1979 and they took Americans hostage, we froze Iranian assets, a significant amount, billions of dollars. So what the Obama administration did was unfroze those assets to get the nuclear deal and delivered that cash in pallets all at one time. Here you go, Iran. Here's the money that we froze. So it was frozen. Here's the money. But we also empowered Iran on a path to nuclearization because the JCPOA allowed nuclear activity by Iran. It was supposed to be monitored, but the monitoring was like a joke. They wouldn't let you into certain sites. So yes, the money, the pallets you hear about, the pallets of cash, was frozen. We had no obligation to give it back to Iran. So the Obama administration did give Iran billions of dollars. It did not have to. Were they billions of dollars that we had originally frozen back in the 80s because of what happened to our embassy? Yes. Was there any obligation for the U.S. to give it back to Iran? No. Did it fund Iranian terror? Absolutely. That is why they have been on this more recent kind of, I'd say, adventurism, Harry, in the Middle East. They've gone to Yemen. They've got the Houthi rebels. They've got this. They were trying to establish this new Hezbollah group in Iraq. They were taking the money not to help their own people, not to help their own citizens, but to reinforce really Soleimani's efforts to spread their version of Shia extremism around the world, focusing in on their region the most.
I think that is correct. And I think it's important to keep in mind that the Obama administration released monies to the Iranian regime, and this enabled them to fund terrorists in Lebanon, in Syria, in Yemen, and throughout the world. In addition to which, the Obama administration, in the lead up to the Iran nuclear deal, refused to enforce U.S. laws aimed at stifling the drug trade with Latin America, in part because some of that money was used to fund Iranian allies in the Middle East, including Hezbollah. So I think it's very, very important to note that the Obama administration effectively subsidized terror campaigns going forward, and it's very, very possible that it certainly has cost human life.
You know, we want to shoot down myths today, and Aaron from our production team, he said some arguments against hitting people like Soleimani or al-Baghdadi are that they are just going to be replaced. But think about it like in football terms right now, we're in the playoffs right now. Do you want to face like Bill Belichick or just one of his assistant coaches? Do you want to face the first string team or the second stringers? It's a no-brainer, and it applies to all aspects of life. In business, you know, if the CEO is gone, well, yeah, they might be a deputy behind him, but they're not necessarily, they'll be ready to go, but not to the same extent. So I think you can apply that here. Is that, yeah, they're going to replace them, but they're never the same. Their replacements are never the same as kind of the leads. They never are. Especially initially, it takes a lot of time to become a Qassem Soleimani. It takes a lot of time to become a Bin Laden. It takes a lot of time to become a Baghdadi. Underground work, secret work, and when you're taken out and quickly replaced by some other guy, that does not mean they are operational. So I think that is important to point out. Let's take final call of the day. Kathy from Texas online too. Kathy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I want to know how it's even legal to present a impeachment by the House whenever they have completely ran roughshod over our president's due process, and they've actually violated his rights.
You know, the thing is, I think it's constant presidential harassment. They have the constitutionally, they have the right to impeach. It doesn't have, you know, for high crimes, misdemeanors, bribery, treason. So they can kind of come up with that. The problem that the House will always run into forever, so long as that constitutional provision stands, is that you can do it with a simple majority vote in the House, so a partisan vote. But in the Senate, you've got to have a supermajority, 67 votes. So that almost always, it has in the past, stopped any presidents from being actually removed from office via impeachment. So, yes, I think it's horrendous what the House has done. I think it's wrong what the House has done. I think it's why we need to get onto that trial and let president get due process, let the American people move on. And let's get to the 2020 election, Democrats. Game on. Let's get to that. We will talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live. Check out ACLJ.org and share that What's Next video on why the killing of Qassem Soleimani was legal. Almost 200,000 views. Let's get it over that.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.